Well, let me say to all of you, I know that these are not challenges that we can address completely in 3 days or a year or maybe a lifetime, but I hope you will leave here believing we're making a difference and that you are. And I want to make a couple of announcements. In December, we will go to Asia for the first CGI meeting ever held outside the United States in Hong Kong on December 2nd and 3rd. Lee Kuan Yew, President Arroyo of the Philippines, and many other major political and business leaders and NGO leaders will join us. And I hope if you live anywhere in the neighborhood and you want to come, you will come too. Next February, we will have our second CGI University meeting at the University of Texas at Austin. That will be February the 13th through the 15th. If you have sons or daughters or other young people you know in college you think would be interested in following in your footsteps, you might think about sending them to our website where they can find an application. We focus there, as here, on a few actionable issues, but we do add one to our four, and that's peace and human rights, because young people have a particular interest in and capacity to establish dialogue and build bridges across lines of faith and culture. And next year, we're going to have another meeting outside the United States, the first time by popular demand in Latin America. The first one will be held in Brazil, and we'll be back to you with more details on that. I mentioned mycommitment.org and how people can call following us and make modest specific commitments. I thought you might. I just asked for a couple that have been made just while we've all been here meeting. And there are two dramatically different, but it just shows you how what people hear and see here sparks their own imagination. One woman typed us a message on mycommitment.org saying she was sick and tired of hearing about all the environmental problems there were and all the waste, and her whole house was being overrun by catalogs. So she said that she was committed to writing the CEO of every single company that sent her a catalog and asking them to all put a number on the front of their, a number or an email address on the front of their catalog in big print so that people could unsubscribe and cut down on waste and junk mail. And one woman logged us to tell us that she was going to send and collect what she called gently used or barely used shoes to children in Iraq and Afghanistan who are running around barefoot and at great risk of all kinds of problems because of that. And it's a simple idea with big potential impact. Now, who knows? Some of these ideas may be better than the ones we come up with. And every time we do this, we find more and more people who just write us and say, well, I don't have much money, but I think I could do this, that, or the other thing. And I think it's important that we give everybody a chance to be a part of this. I'd like to just say one other thing, because I saw again today people saying, well, maybe this whole movement will lose steam in the face of all these financial upheavals. I just want to make this point. Think about how many of the world's challenges are reinforcing each other. Right? If oil goes too high, then a lot of poor countries lose the whole benefit of the global debt relief effort and the amount of their foreign aid. Then the cost of producing food and transporting it goes up exponentially, so more people are hungry. If they're hungry, then if they've got HIV or AIDS, then our medicine doesn't work so well anymore. And they may get sick and die anyway. And on and on and on. You heard just from the neglected tropical diseases, you heard all the consequences that flow from having one of these conditions. We cannot afford to walk away from this work. And the fact that the wealthy world is in trouble, I know I have an unconventional view of this, and I may be wrong, but I've been right on economics once or twice in my life. I think, are we in the fix we're in today because of regulatory failures and improvident risk and all that? Yeah, we are. Do I think America would have been better off having no tax cuts for people in my income group and having a more conservative budget policy and investing more money? I certainly do. But I think the biggest problem we've got is we had all this money sloshing around in our country, and the only good place to invest it appeared superficially to be in housing. So too much money went through a narrow funnel, and people kept jamming more and more in. So you had to think of cleverer and cleverer ways with higher and higher risk to keep expanding the same opportunity because people were blind to other opportunities. If we had been investing in our poor neighborhoods, if we had been investing in a clean, independent energy future, if this money had gone into solar power or wind power or biodiesel or electric cars or making a partnership with an energy partnership with Haiti, the Dominican Republic, and our other neighbors in the Caribbean, it would have been a different world out there. And a lot fewer people would have taken improvident risks. This is not simply a regulatory thing. This is about how we imagine our real economic future. And so our ideas of assets and opportunities are too constrained. Gordon Brown told you a couple of stories. I'll close with a couple. When Chelsea and I and our foundation crowd took our recent trip to Africa, our annual trip, we went to Ethiopia, where our AIDS program has now become a healthcare program. We're helping the Ethiopians to go from only 700 clinics in a country with 77 million, closer to 80 million people now. Outside their urban areas, they got 700 clinics in the whole country. So we're trying to go to 3,500. And while we're traveling around, I also have started to visit your projects, the CGI projects, because I want you to have the visibility you deserve where people live. So we get to this little village called Rima, where the CGI commitment was by a wealthy company based in Europe to finance an NGO in putting small, really quite small, solar panels on every little house in a village and also on a school that was a one-room school, but quite a large one, designed by the villagers. And I'm sitting there blown away because I walk into the schoolroom that is heated by a solar panel when we could be doing this in the United States, and there are four lights in the schoolroom selected by the villagers, these people with no education who don't think they're part of the energy future. Do you know what they did? Catty-cornered were two lights that were compact fluorescent bulbs. Other catty-cornered, two lights that were LED bulbs. Most of us don't have any LED lighting in our home. Some of you, shame on us, don't have compact fluorescent bulbs. They picked the compact fluorescent bulbs at two corners because the light was diffuse, so they could have classes at night and group study. They picked the LED lighting at the other two corners because the light is concentrated, and people who have to work at night at a second job or want to come in and read alone can do that. And they customized the most rudimentary classroom in the world with the most modern lighting on earth that turns out to be cheaper for them over the long run than if they were trying to figure out an old-fashioned way to get electricity with a screw-in incandescent light bulb. These people are smart. They just don't have our opportunities. Those are the assets of the future, and we have to change the way we think about economics. I could tell you that story about every country in the world, but I saw that with my own eyes. And just one more. I visited several places in Rwanda where it's been my great opportunity to work, and now I see all of our health work is being done through partners. Partners in Health. So we go to Rinkwabu, where we rebuilt the hospital for the first time since the genocide. But I wanted to see one of the geniuses of the Partners in Health model Dr. Farmer developed is the community health workers, people with no formal education. They were trained to work with people to make sure they take their medicine, to help do preliminary diagnosis, to steer them to a clinic if they need that, or find a way to get them all the way to the nearest hospital if that's what they need. And it, therefore, in the most cost-effective way, to build the highest quality possible health network you can imagine. So we roll into the village where I meet this community health worker named Beatrice, who obviously could have been elected mayor of the town. And she introduces me to this brother and sister who are living together. Her name was Eugenie, his name was Jean-Paul. She was 19, he was 15. She has been his de facto parent for 12 years, for 9 years, since both their parents died. So the PIH people, the Partners in Health people, they came, and this boy was desperately ill because he had AIDS, no medicine, no nutrition, not in school, most of his life. His poor sister had no money. They were living in a mud hut with less floor space than I am standing on. And so our people, this is not part of the program, they built them another house with a cooking area out back so it can't contaminate the house. It's just a simple two-room house with a walkway through. It was just about as nice as any house in the village. And because of the work that the health worker did and the medicine he's getting, the nutrition, the young boy goes back to school, 15 years old, in the third grade. And at first, you know, he didn't know who I was, we were, he just knew sort of we were on the right side here. And I got down, he was very small, I looked in his eyes and I said, I want you to tell me you're not going to drop out of school even though you're just in the third grade. And it was like I'd hit him in between the eyes, and he smiled, and then he laughed, and he said, oh, I'm not going to drop out. I'm going to keep going until I become a doctor so I can help other kids who were sick like me. I won't quit. Don't worry. How many people like that are walking around with their dreams? So then I said to the sister, I said, now what do you want? I said, you know, you gave up your childhood. She sacrificed too, right? This young girl with her dreams, she gave up her whole childhood to raise her brother that she half expected to die at any time until they showed up. I said, what do you want? She said, I want to open a store. She said, I know I could sell things. I could do things. I could be very successful. And Ted Danson was there with us, and was here early. He was so moved that as soon as we walked away, he said, tell him to find out how much the store costs. That'll be my commitment this year. So the girl's going to have a store, and little Jean-Pierre, he has a chance to become a doctor and live his dreams. So we read all about all this turmoil in the world. Don't forget, it turns out that doing the right thing is the best economics. It turns out that over the long run, doing the right thing is the best politics. Look, I thank Gordon Brown. I'm with him. It's not popular, but we ought to pass some version of what the president and administration want to do. We ought to do it in a bipartisan way. We ought to say we don't like it, but we don't want the house of cards to fall down, and we'd like for people to be able to get a car loan in America tomorrow. We've got to fix this up. You have to do a lot of things that aren't popular when you get in the ditch that you dug. You first thing you have to do is stop digging. So I want all that done. But I'm just telling you, a part of what is happening in our country and in other wealthy countries is the misperception of assets and opportunities and the misalignment of how we invest our time and money and what kind of future we all say we want. And if you really think about it, about all we do here is try to find in our own limited way opportunities to close the gap between what we say and what we do, between what we feel and what we see. This has really been a good year. And if you have any ideas about how we can do better next year, let us go. No. Go out there and talk to other people who don't come here and try to make sure that someday meetings like this will be utterly irrelevant because people will behave in the way we try to behave as second nature. Thank you, and God bless you all.